The Doug and Wolf Show.
The next 4 hours of your life will be outstanding wherever you are if you keep listening to The Doug and Wolf Show.
You're calling your shot.
I'm calling my shot on today's show.
Doug Franz, Ron Wolfley.
You know that's good radio.
Oh, yeah.
Doug and Wolf, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
I hate the bells, but I admit, for some reason, I was ready for Wednesday already, and I was quiet waiting for the bells.
Stop it. Are you kidding me, Douglas? Honestly, we used to have Punch You in the Face Tuesday. I love that, ladies and gentlemen. We say good morning to you, the Doug and Wolf Show. Savages in the morning broadcasting.
I got no issues. I had a nice day yesterday, so it's not like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe this week is dragging on. I just, for some reason, froze in time there. And
what do you mean you had a nice day, Douglas? You actually enjoyed your time walking around the compound? Is that what you're saying? Or you actually got out? Is that what you're implying?
I may or may not have had a one-on-one battle with the Gold Course yesterday. It's such a weird time for us, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm supposed to be at training camp, but right now the training camp's in Tempe, and they haven't moved to Glendale yet, and they're still testing every day for the first 2 weeks, but the media is not there, so I didn't have that, and then I got everything show-wise done early yesterday, and then there's no game. There's no D-backs, no Coyotes, no Suns. And I thought, you know what? Let's go for it. And that's probably the last time I'll be playing golf this year. So I went and did that. I do have a story for you that I know what it's like when somebody dumps a story like this on you, that just the shock value of how time marches on.
Yeah.
But the first Doug and Wolf Show in Flagstaff was 2007. And about a few days into our first training camp together, McKenna turned 3 years old. And today is my daughter's 16th birthday. And I can safely tell all of Phoenix, she has been driving with her temporary license for quite some time, and she does not drive fast.
Okay.
So she refuses to go past the speed limit, which in alone is a problem because we are – now, she's in the right lane, but, I mean, we are at 65. I've been able to get her up to 67. But we are that person.
And, of course, you're encouraging this, right?
Out
of the, of course.
A little bit of the –
You don't want her to drive as fast as you do, Douglas. Of course not.
I don't want that, but there's at least a little bit of the element of we should try to stay up with the flow of traffic, sweetheart.
Oh, I see.
She just says, you know, the speed limit's 65, Daddy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, okay. So how do you argue with your kid? There are rules, and then there are suggestions. And if nobody is going 65, then, you know, you do kind of have to. But we're in the right lane. I feel like we should turn our flashers on. But we're sitting in the right lane, and we're doing 65, and people are passing us, and she's okay with it.
Yeah, okay. Did you go ahead and buy her a car? Did you buy her
Good
a vehicle?
Lord, no.
But
no.
You did not. There's no way you're going to do that, right?
Probably not. I might. I mean, we bought Vienna a car.
Okay,
so
now
it's
you're
not like
hedging already.
It's not like I'm against it. But you ask me, like, I have power.
Yes.
Like, I think
okay.
I said we're not buying Vienna a car, and then we bought Vienna a car.
Well, there you go.
Because I don't think I have power.
Of course you're gonna buy McKenna a car if you bought Vienna a car.
We don't follow along the well. Wait, if I do one for one kid, I got to do it for the other. No,
here's the deal, right here. Okay, when you get to a certain age, and it's not going to be 16, Basinonians, and we don't play that in the Wolfley compound.
Okay,
I'm just telling you this right now. Okay, we don't do that. When you get to be a certain age, if anything you've saved, we'll go ahead and we'll match that.
Oh, okay.
Anything you have saved for a vehicle, we'll go ahead and we'll match that. And
now, like for PCH, do you play the music and you have the match and you run around trying to put her?
We don't do that, Douglas. That's just an understanding that we have in the compound, my friends.
Okay.
You save the money. That's fine. We'll go ahead and we'll match that, and the fact that we get to actually put a tracker on your vehicle then.
You at least have the phone. You can track their phone and then figure out where they're going. I haven't thought of that. That's not bad. We admittedly bought the oldest a car because we got sick of being asked to take her places or deal with that. And McKenna is a very active high school student. If there's ever a point where you're at, if you have active high school students again, and there's actually, you know, on campus events, and if there are, then I could see Jennifer saying, I'm tired of driving her. She needs a car. I could see that happen.
Yes. First of all, phones. I mean, there's no way. The kids in the Wolfley compound, 12 and 10 years old, you know what? When you're 17, maybe we'll get you a phone. We'll let you have a phone. you're 17. And we're going to track the phone and the vehicle. Okay, I'm just saying.
Our kids were...
You think I'm dumb, ladies and gentlemen? You think I grew up and don't know what's going on? Yeah.
We were different with phones. We didn't stop them from getting a phone, but we didn't buy it for them. You buy your own phone if you want a phone.
Oh, man. Well, you know, there you go. You want a phone, that's fine. We'll let you have a phone when we say you can have a phone.
You knock yourself out. But I don't know if you saw this yesterday. I haven't figured out whether this is brilliant or just idiotic. And anybody that wants to tweet me on what they thought when they saw this, it was pretty hysterical last night. If you're watching hockey, Connor McDavid had a hat trick.
Yeah.
By the way, Connor McDavid, number one pick overall by the Coyotes, right? Didn't they win that draft
name.
Lottery?
Connor McDavid.
So Connor McDavid gets a hat trick, and a couple employees, I've only seen video of one, but I was told it was about four, employees of the NHL come walking down the steps, and they throw hats on the ice.
They threw hats
yes,
on the
yes.
ice.
Yes, okay. So the NHL threw hats on the ice for meaning okay. They actually had thought about what if somebody gets a hat trick in the bubble.
Right. There's
and so they
there.
Threw that. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate that. That was
I could
cool
tell.
Of you right there.
Not very often does a talk show host have no idea what his opinion is on something, but I watched that last night, and I saw that hat go flying out there, and I said, okay, wait. Do we really want to waste time cleaning up the hats? But it is kind of funny that somebody thought, well, what if we get a hat trick? Are we going to do anything about it?
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like it's original and kind of feel like it's a waste of time. But I wanted to ask any hockey fans, how did you feel about it?
Sure.
That?
Speaking of watching, Basinonians, you may want to watch the first period. Even if you're not you might not even be a hockey fan, ladies and gentlemen, okay? But if you want to see something extraordinary, watch the first period of Game 2 tonight. Watch the first period where the Coyotes and the Predators are playing today.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't feel corrected, but 11:30 in the morning.
Exactly, not tonight.
Which is kind of tonight for us.
Today. Yeah, right, today. Watch that first period. You want to see an absolute metaphorical Donnybrook? Watch that first period. You might get hooked if you're not a hockey fan. It might blow your mind.
It's basically Nashville fighting for their life and the Coyotes trying to decide, can we handle now going from underdog to favorite in just,
how
what,
they
maybe
weather.
45 minutes of hockey? It was by the time 45 minutes of hockey were over in game one,
yes.
The Coyotes flipped from being underdog to favorite?
Yeah. How they handle that first period, the Coyotes, could determine the series.
Mm. I need to find a sheet. Oh, there's one. The Starting Five is brought to you by Sand Chevrolet. Sand Chevrolet, your home team for no payments until 2021 on select models. Head to sandchevrolet.com for details.
And now, it's time for your Arizona Sports Starting Five. You can't go to work without knowing these five huge stories.
Bring it, Vinny.
Here's Doug Franz and Ron Wolfley.
Here comes the pop.
Number five.
There you go. Number five this morning. This is kind of interesting. Derek Jeter has now gone on the record to defend the Miami Marlins players, saying it's unfair how they were being characterized, basically by people like me, for going out in Atlanta, saying one teammate or one person just went to a teammate's house for dinner who lives in Atlanta, and other teammates did go to a hotel bar, but they were in the hotel, but they didn't have their masks on. I look at Derek Jeter, and Derek, I don't want to call you a liar, but anytime you come out 9 days after the outbreak and you're explaining what happened with the Marlins, I'm sorry, I don't believe you at all.
Maybe he's so out of touch he didn't know that people were actually pointing fingers at the Marlins.
Now, that is a little bit like Derek Jeter.
Hanging out with the governor of Georgia.
Of not knowing about the masses.
Number four.
Number four this morning. My opinion on number four is just you guys can have them. But If they all succeed, look out. Receiver signings in the NFC West. 49ers have signed former Washington Redskins tight end Jordan Reed, who's been battling concussion and ankle issues. If you have a healthy Jordan Reed, you could argue it will be the same as Aaron Hernandez and Rob Gronkowski on the Patriots. That would be amazingly difficult to defend with that mind of Kyle Shanahan. It's just, I don't think Jordan Reed will ever be totally healthy again. And Josh Gordon and, at the same time, Antonio Brown have not been ruled out of joining the Seattle Seahawks together.
AB in the NFC West?
Yes.
Ooh.
I say, hey, go ahead, Seattle, knock yourself out.
Number three
today, 6:10. It's a little bit different first pitch time than what we're used to. 6:10, D-backs taking on the Houston Astros. And you're going to be shocked by finding this out. You might not realize that George Springer and Jose Altuve could barely start for the Diamondbacks this year. Those two players are slumping just as bad as the Diamondbacks' offense. It's just that the Astros are a game above 500.
Of course, nobody's banging a trash can either.
That's probably why they're struggling.
Number two
this morning is Ricky Rubio was on with Burns and Gambo yesterday, and he talked about the opportunity that the Phoenix Suns have right now. And you want to talk about an opportunity? It's all staring them down when they take on the L.A. Clippers today at 1 o'clock on ESPN 620 AM.
Sound the division bell.
Number one.
And the number one thing you need to know about this morning, DeAndre Hopkins speaks to the media and he wants to be Kyler Murray's best friend. That's important because that means these two might be together for a long time. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Boy, here's something interesting. We're going to be talking heavy here about DeAndre Hopkins, but bits and pieces are coming in today as last night and this morning, the NFL Players Association and the league finally came to an agreement on the additional parts of the NFL Players Association CBA with the league. And one of them is a team can challenge COVID as a football injury. So if you test positive, you're put on the COVID injured list. And then there are protocols for you to get back and what it takes to get back. However, the team has the right to investigate. And then they can challenge your COVID and try to prove you were in high-risk COVID conduct is what it's called. And if a player engages in high-risk COVID conduct, they don't get any of their money. And therefore, Andrew Brandt, a former sports lawyer, well, I guess you're still a sports lawyer, who does a lot of reporting work now, has said, I guarantee you agents will be warning all players no selfies.
No selfies, yeah.
One selfie with a buddy is going to be able to prove you were too close to somebody without a mask or at a party, at a get-together, and that could be considered high-risk COVID conduct, which is actually a phrase now in this new agreement.
When you think of the NFL and the NFLPA, ladies and gentlemen, and this agreement that they have right now, the only thing I think of is this is what a partnership looks like. This is what a partnership looks like. It is reasonable. It is irrational. It is understandable. It is professional is what it is. Mm-hmm. And it's just saying, hey, listen, we all understand what is going on right now, and we all have responsibilities. It is give and take. It's what a partnership looks like.
It took a while, but yeah, you're right. They got it done. We told you the number one thing this morning, which we like to do for you at 6:15, is the fact that he's actually a Cardinal.
It's a form of chemistry. It's not just on the field, but off the field. Us communicating, texting each other, calling each other, and just building a camaraderie of something that is going to last for a long time, not just while we're playing football, but after football. But my expectations is us becoming best friends and doing everything together because I have to be on the same page with my quarterback no matter what for for us to be successful as a team, not just him and I. But, you know, Kyler has done a great job of leading and helping me, you know, kind of get up to speed with what's going on with the playbook and everything. So, you know, I think we're off to a good start.
Man, in a gross simplification of the truth, this is the story of the 2020 Arizona Cardinals, Masononians. How will Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins mesh on the field? What kind of chemistry will they develop on the field? If they're best friends off the field, ladies and gentlemen, that's fantastic. That's just great if, in fact, they develop this chemistry off the field as well. But I've seen an awful lot of guys actually develop a chemistry with a quarterback on the field. You know, they didn't hang out with him. No, they may not have liked him even. Yet they went out there and tore it up because they had great chemistry on the field. That basically is what matters. It doesn't hurt, though. Don't get me wrong. It never hurts if your friend's off the field as well. But on the field is where you've got to develop this chemistry, and that's really what I care about.
And I would assume that you could argue you've seen lots of times where players on your team, and since we're specifically talking about quarterbacks and wide receivers, they are unbelievable friends off the field.
Yeah.
And they don't develop great chemistry on it because they're great friends off the field. They don't say to each other the things that they need to say from time to time to be able to get the job done. I would imagine that that's rare, but I'm sure that it happens.
Yeah.
This is DeAndre Hopkins talking about, I like this, because we made a big deal about it. I always said, if Tom Brady thinks it's important, then you should think it's important. Tom Brady had his workouts, some of them in violation of the rules in place by the city of Tampa or the state of Florida. But he had his get-together, and DeAndre Hopkins finally got together with Murray in Texas. How was that? How did that go? Is that a big deal?
It was very valuable. It was, you know, something that I think obviously we're going to continue to do once we get free time, a little off time, build chemistry like that. But Kyler getting us together in Dallas was something that I expected of him, something I knew he was going to do. And him being the guy he is, he wants to win. So, you know, that was very expected of him to do that. And we really don't have a lot of time together, obviously, but, you know, we're making the best of it right now. And I really, you know, I haven't had a season where I've, you know, really had a lot of off seasons with a quarterback. So, you know, that's really hasn't been a thing, you know, a problem of the past. And I don't see it, you know, being a problem now.
You know what's so interesting about this, right? We're talking about professional sports and chemistry that you've got to develop and everything else. And at the same time, there's always the meeting and the first meeting and the first work day when you go to work and you're starting a new job and you're meeting all these people, right? And it's like, hey, great. Oh, this is fantastic. I have no idea what your name is. I'm not going to remember it. I have no idea, but I look forward to really getting to know you. And you know what? Our work environment being great. You have to get the human part of it out first, right? You have to get it out of the way first. Fascinating, isn't it? Even here you are, and you're talking about all we had to get together and throw the ball and get some type of chemistry and learn the offense. But before that, we had to actually look at each other eye to eye and say, hey, what's going on? It's the human element, right? I mean, that's what it comes down to. You got to get that out of the way first before you can actually get some work done.
You seem shocked.
It's just, well, it's incredible. You're talking about playing football at the highest level our species can generate, and at the same time, just to be able to look at each other and say, hey, this is kind of cool. We're going to be working together for years.
And that's one of the things, even though this isn't the point, I remember B.A. talking about what you lost in OTAs in minicamp was getting rid of the awe factor for Tom Brady. That the receivers coming, oh my gosh, we're really working with, that's really Tom Brady.
Exactly.
And how important it was, get that over with in June. Be done with that so we're really getting work in. And there's probably a little bit of that at the beginning of these workouts with D-Hop and Kyler that, hey, I'm just now getting, this is my locker? Okay. This is the receiver room? Okay. This is where you and I, okay. And all of these things are brand new to DeAndre Hopkins, but he's not worried about chemistry time.
I think I will have time to develop chemistry with Kyler. Kyler going to his second year, obviously, is advanced in his offense. other guys also. Last year was the first year of a lot of people being in this offense, and you can tell just from the first day that, you know, I wasn't here, but just from hearing guys, we're far advanced than where we were this point last year. So I think, obviously, he's matured in this offense, and, you know, I'm new to it, but he's doing a good job of keeping me up to par with things and also the other guys around me. But I think we will have time to develop chemistry once, you know, we kind of get out there and throw a little bit more, you know, against the defense. I think that'll help. Obviously, we don't have a lot of time to get ready, so every rep really counts. But I think Kyler's mindset is we're going to make it work. So that's my mindset as well.
I'm sure, Wolf, there were times where DeAndre Hopkins thought, I'm going to be here with Deshaun Watson for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
He more than a lot of other receivers, knows what it's like to go through the Larry Fitzgerald situation of a revolving door of weak or poor quarterbacks until he got Deshaun Watson. But he had to wait for Watson to mature as well. But I bet he thought we'd be here for a while. But now he's walking into a situation unlike any other he's ever been in, where obviously life changes, but he's got to feel like, I'm going to be signing a contract extension here. Barring a terrible situation, Kyler Murray is going to be signing a contract extension at some point. He's got to feel like, this is now, I have a chance to not only be a Cardinal for life, but play for a great quarterback the time that I'm here. And so few receivers get that.
No, you're right about that, Doug Lease. But honestly, what I loved about Hop and what he said right there is he matured in this offense. He was talking about Kyler Murray maturing in this offense last year. You had me right there. That's what I absolutely – what offense, D-Hop, are you talking about? The offense that started with four wides or the offense that finished with two tights or a combination of the two? Totally. Sorry, I'm an analyst, ladies and gentlemen. This is where my mind goes. When he said he matured in this offense, we saw the offense totally develop in front of our face.
And I'm a driver, so let's get to Bobby Marks. I'm excited about this. Bobby Marks, the former general manager with the Nets, or former involved with the Nets, and he's also the ESPN front office insider. And he talked about how much he loves the player development advantage for the Suns. And that was before they were 2-0. He'll explain next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. A strong show of bravery. Good morning. It's Doug and Wolf with Wolf Maloney, and or Maloney's off today. I forgot. Wolf Minchin and Bear all live in the Auction Community Studios, and I'm still on the west side in Studio Wife as we practice social distancing, or in Hugh Hallman's case, physical distancing. But it was a show of bravery that you have to be impressed with that happened yesterday morning, in which ESPN NBA insider Bobby Marks sent out a tweet, and as soon as he hit control enter, or as soon as he hit the button to send it, whatever he does when he tweets, he had to know, I just sent out a tweet about Phoenix. I know Doug and Wolf are going to be calling. But here's his tweet. 3 games into the seeding games, and I already feel like there is a huge player development advantage for teams like Phoenix, Washington, and San Antonio versus the 8 teams that were not invited. Hard to replicate game action in an empty gym. And Bobby Marks joins us now. Bobby, first of all, how's the family? How's the health? Everybody good?
Everyone's good. Thanks, guys. How are you?
Good.
Doing
good,
great, Bobby.
Well, like I said, you knew as soon as you wrote the word Phoenix, we were gonna come after you. I was thrilled with the tweet, but tell me why, as a front office insider, sometimes there's things that you probably knew. Hey, you guys are gonna get good work in, but what did you see in the first 2 games that stood out to you by the Suns that made you really realize what an advantage this is?
Yeah, I mean, I think I saw certainly the, you know, the Dallas game, the, you know, how, you know, a player like Cam Johnson, who's still in an extension of his rookie season right now, has played. I think what Monty's been able to do kind of with the lineups and bring Dario Saric off the bench and kind of tweak things around and go small ball and experiment with certain things. You wouldn't be able to do that if they were sitting at home right now. And you know, I think from, you know, I'm watching Washington the other day, and, you know, the Wizards will probably go winless here, but it doesn't really matter because you're going to get your player development of Troy Brown and Rui Hachimura and guys like that. And it's funny, when I sent out that tweet, I got three responses from three teams that were not in the, or not in Orlando with thank you. With a thank you, because they feel like they are the forgotten teams right now. And they agree, they are at a huge disadvantage because they can't do anything, guys. I mean, basically it's one-on-0workouts. It's one guy at a basket, and they don't know when it's going to be. And I think what's happening is that where the, you know, the testing is and where the positives are, and what we're probably seeing a little bit in baseball, there's such a fear from the Players Association to kind of let those eight teams kind of do as they see, because of where players could be tested positive, and how the bubble in Orlando has basically protected everyone. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the odds on Phoenix getting into that play-in game, yeah, let's face it, it's a long shot here, especially with the teams in front of them, but you can't replicate as far as the game action that they're going through. And it's, you know, it's not like the all 30 teams are, like, you're playing somebody good every night. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, certainly today against the Clippers will be a good test, but you have to like what you see. And I think it gives you a springboard for next year. And I think the big thing, guys, too, is it helps Devin out from the psyche standpoint. Yes. That, hey, a couple tweaks here, a couple tweaks there, maybe we add a lottery pick, you know, and we can compete with these teams to try to get into the playoffs.
I think, Bobby, that point right there is so important, right? It's an encouragement to Devin Booker in this Anthony Davis era, right, where you could force your way out of a franchise. Yeah. It's an encouragement, I would imagine, to Devin Booker. We're part of the association. We're one of the 22 teams that are there. To not be down in Orlando right now, I don't know how that would make you feel like you actually were playing in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, it's different than what Golden State had gone through, and they're sitting at home but they've gone through their championship run with Curry, Green, and Thompson here. But if you were Devin and you were one of the eight teams, and you're on a, going into year two of a max contract, and you're thinking like, well, what about me? You know, when is the help coming for me? And, this week, last week, even the couple weeks as far as the individual workout and team workouts, has proved beneficial here. And I think it shows that if they can have a good showing, and we'll see what happens, that the future is bright because of, they do have a pretty good foundation in place.
Bobby March joining Doug and Wolf, ESPN NBA front office insider. Give me, since you brought up Devin, the sample size is large enough. Do you look at Devin Booker in the kind of tiers of superstarness and say that guy is the major piece to a championship team? Is he one of the magic three, where you've always got to have three major guys and he's just one of three? Or is he a really good piece to a champion? You know, on those levels, where do you put Devin Booker?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think he's a tier one guy, and there's not that many of those tier ones, right? The LeBrons, the Kawhi, Kevin Durant when he's healthy. There's probably four. Anthony Davis, probably four or five of those guys. I think he's certainly in that next level. Can he take a team on his back and take it to an NBA Finals or a Western Conference Finals? I don't think so. I think, you know, certainly the pieces around him would have to get better or maybe develop, but I think he's an all-star despite not being selected as an all-star. I think the two games in Orlando has showed that he doesn't need to go out and give you 35 to 40. I think from a facilitating standpoint, from a delegating standpoint, I think he's starting to trust his teammates a little bit more. But yeah, I think he's certainly an all-star. I think he's probably a fringe all-NBA type guy. I almost kind of put him in that category of the Wizards' Bradley Beal.
Okay.
You know, Bobby, when you look at Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges, is there one that you're more impressed with?
Well, probably Mikal, because of the development from his rookie year to his sophomore year, his second year in the league here, and how he's been able to kind of, he can basically play any position, probably except center. I mean, they've experimented him at the four. He's played at three. I think he's taken a really big, big jump here. I think with Cam, you know, everybody, you know, crushed Phoenix as far as, you know, where they picked him as far as, you know, in the part of the lottery, that I think you had, I think the Dallas game when he can come out and give you 19, 20 points here. And, you know, it's kind of a effortless performance. I think he's, you know, he's, I don't think he's a rookie anymore. I think he's got a really strong, strong demeanor about him. So probably McHale, I think, just because of where he was from a year ago to where he's now, I think there's certainly, you know, certainly a comfort level. And it's funny, guys, you know, I'm writing up these offseason articles and I'm not quite done with Phoenix yet. But the one question I have is that does the play of Bridges and Johnson now make Kelly expendable, right? I mean, what happens with Kelly, who's certainly a good player and is coming, you know, has a knee injury and is not able to play, but now he's going into an expiring contract. You know, what happens to the future of Kelly Oubre?
And guess what my next question was, Bobby Marks, front office insider. I was looking at Saric and Baines and Oubre, yeah. And it's really, sure. That's kind of what the bubble was also about. Sure, you'd love to get
those
into the playoffs.
Those are my two questions.
Okay. And now, hey, nobody's hired me to be in a front office, Bobby, so they've hired you. I got to ask, what would you do?
Yeah, so with Saric and Baines, even Frank Kaminsky's got a team option. I think the big thing going before the pandemic hit was what cap flexibility versus retaining your own players. Mm-hmm. I think the choice is going to be probably made for Phoenix because I think we're going to see a dip in the salary cap. It could probably go down to from 115 to 109. I would keep continuity, and with Saric and Baines, who's, you know, hasn't played yet, I would overpay them in year one, which is 2021. I'd tack on a team option for year two, and kind of keep your flexibility for 2021. Because I think Dario is kind of finding a nice role here, kind of as that sixth man coming off the bench. And I think the same goes with Kaminsky also. I just look at the pool of free agents this upcoming summer as below average at best. You go out there, if you don't bring these guys back, you're basically what, you got $15 million in cap space. You're kind of swimming with all these other teams competing, you know, who has the $9 million mid-level here. So that's kind of my direction with Saric, Baines, and Kaminsky. I think Kelly, I don't think you have to do quite anything yet. I think you kind of let things play out as far as where your younger players go. That's not an October decision just because a guy's on an expiring contract. I think you probably want to showcase him a little bit to show that he is healthy. But, yeah, I mean, the reality is if Kelly has another strong year and is healthy, that the price tag probably will go, I don't know, $18 million, $19 million. And then what happens is that these guys that are on these rookie contracts, now they're become extension eligible again. So now you get DeAndre Ayton, who's extension eligible. You get, you know, Mikal Bridges, who eventually will become extension eligible. Your price of your salary starts to increase a little bit.
Bobby, I so badly want to see DeAndre Ayton shimmy shake on the rim. You know what I mean? Just a little. And I don't really see him being that way mentally. What do you see when you watch DA play?
Yeah, I mean, I think the performance against Washington and I thought was, you know, high level. I thought, you know, Mike Schmitz, who works with us and does a lot of the college evaluations, really had a nice piece on DeAndre as far as where he's going. I think certainly where, you know, we saw the Dallas game where I think he went, I mean, he was basically non-existent there. It's going to be about consistency here. And that's kind of where it goes back to having an insurance policy. If it's Aaron Baines or another veteran, it's hard for me to kind of, I'm not ready to kind of throw DeAndre out into the deep end and let him swim, you know, by himself quite yet. I think the potential is there to be an all-star level player. But, you know, this year was kind of a mixed bag from the suspension. He was nicked up here. I think these six games are really going to be important for him. I really do. I think it does give you a baseline as far as for next year.
And then just out of nowhere, Bobby Marks, who's been in a real-life draft room, after 1 year of watching basketball this last year, if you redid the 2019 draft, Zion or Ja?
Yeah, I get still nervous with, you know, you watch Zion yesterday and it was only, 20 minutes plus, and he was, I mean, he was electrifying. I get nervous with Zion. I don't know. He might wake up this morning and something, you know, there's an injury or there's a calf or there's an ankle. I don't know if I ever see him as a guy who's going to play 30 to 35 minutes consistently. That's how my take on Zion. I know Josh struggled heavily yesterday in that game. We kind of put a spotlight on it, game on it. I think it was, 4 for 20 or 1 for 10 from three, and he really, really struggled. I am more of point guards, you know, especially having Jason Kidd in New Jersey for a long time. I love quarterbacks, guys who can kind of run the team. So I'm going to pick Ja just because of if Zion, you know, with this year played 30 to 35 minutes and did what he did at Duke and you know, the injuries weren't there, then yeah, Zion. But I just get nervous about him long term here, guys.
I'm with you.
Bobby, thank you so much for
your
time,
Bobby.
Buddy. Really appreciate it. God bless you and your family.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Absolutely. You too. There's Bobby Marks, ESPN NBA insider, and he's a really good follow if you want to pick up pieces of information NBA-wise as a whole as well. It's at Bobby Marks 42 who joined us. Coming up next, we take a look at one of the things that everybody is jacked up about, D-backs Astros, and we don't get to boo. But the Astros aren't hitting without trash cans. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
I'm your draft expert, Take Ja Morant.
Matt Bum's on the hill tonight. Bum on the bump. And Diamondbacks taking on the Astros. It's kind of a weird game tonight. No official word on who's starting for the Astros. Valdez is scheduled to start, so he's still listed as the starting pitcher on a lot of promotional stuff that I've seen. However, he pitched 6 1/3 in relief on Sunday. And the Astros have had 3 of their last 4 games go into extra innings.
Hmm.
So their bullpen, even though they had the day off yesterday like the D-backs, their bullpen's a little taxed. So if you want to win this game, like the Astros are better than the Diamondbacks, but they're ripe right now. It's not a good time for the Astros. So hopefully the Diamondbacks can take care of things. Wolf, I got a couple things to play for you. And I want to know if you're sensing something after you hear this. Yesterday on the Doug and Wolf Show, Paul kept bringing up quite a few times the comment from Torrey Lovello over the weekend about getting sucker punched by the Padres. And I heard Merrill Kelly after his start say something really interesting. And I wonder, I don't think the Diamondbacks front office / manager over-communicated with anybody. I think sometimes you got to say reality. And then if it affects people negatively, now you know what kind of person you're dealing with. But here's what I mean. Listen to this for a second and tell me what you hear. Here's Merrill Kelly. Do you feel like guys are pressing too much?
I think you'd have to ask each individual guy. I don't want to speak for, you know, what guys' mentalities are in the clubhouse and the rest of the team because, you know, obviously I don't know. I think the pressing part, we had a couple meetings early in the season. I think the pressing part, I think, could be a big part of it. You know, I think coming into the year, there was a lot of talk about, oh, it's a 60-game sprint. It's a 60-game sprint. You can't afford to, you know, get off on the wrong foot. And I think that probably played a part early. But I just think we just need to get back to playing our brand of baseball, and I think we'll be okay.
So there's Merrill Kelly basically saying, listen, we had a lot of meetings. There was a lot of talk. We got to get underway fast. We got to get underway fast. We got to get underway fast. And then when Torrey Lovello was asked about kind of realizing what happened in the exhibition, those 2 games in summer camp against the Dodgers, he looked at it and said, you know, the Dodger series isn't the problem.
Yes. Now, you can't
tell that was Tim Kirchner. Wrong button.
You know, this team, I think, hopefully, the more baseball that they play, the better they're going to get. I firmly believe that, but it's not going to happen by accident. We're going to have to work at it, and we're going to have to believe that it's going to happen for us. But do I think the exhibition games had an impact on us? Minimally. I think it was probably the best thing for us to go out and compete against another team. I just think we got sucker punched by a very good San Diego Padre team, and we've had a tough time recovering from that.
Well, that kind of scares me. If Merrill Kelly is saying, yeah, we had a bunch of meetings, a lot of talk, we got to get off to a fast start, and then the manager's admitting we got sucker punched and lost 3-1 in San Diego, and I don't think we've recovered from that, it sounds like to me the guys kind of shut down for a second when they realized, wow, we just failed to get off to this good start.
You know, I'm just wondering if it's had a negative impact on the guys like David Peralta, of course, Eduardo Escobar, Nick Ahmed. I mean, these are guys the Diamondbacks are counting on to produce. These are guys, especially when you talk about David Peralta and Eduardo Escobar. You're talking about guys that are hitters. You're talking about guys that are going to be coming up with some critical hits in critical situations. And I wonder if it's actually having a negative impact on them, the fact that everyone has been talking about this 60-game sprint, and you have to get off to a good start. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden, if you're just gripping and pressing a little bit, and to hear Merrill Kelly say, I think you'd have to talk to each individual guy about that. He's so right on the money.
I think that's a big yes, isn't it?
Yeah, yes. He's so right, Basin audience. That tells you he was actually listening to the question and giving you a thoughtful answer.
Yes.
He was actually listening and gave you a thoughtful and truthful answer, because it is. It's different with every individual. But I'm wondering if it's had a negative impact on those three guys in particular.
I hope everybody understands when I said this. I'm not blaming the organization at all. Are you kidding? Of course you should have the conversation about the – here we go. I mean, it's on right now. You are tied for first place at the end of July. What are you going to do about it? And it kind of scares me. If I'm Mike Hazen, I'm nervous right now. And I'm not – listen, we can talk about 2020 all you want. I'm nervous. Do I have the people in a clubhouse to win a championship that I thought I did? Because if they couldn't handle the pressure of losing a July series to the Padres, why is that any different than having the exact same thing happen in 2021, where you battle it out in April, May, and June, and most of July, and you're coming up at the end of July in a fight for the playoffs, a fight for the pennant, and crap happens. You lose 3-1. Okay. Now, how do you respond? And how the Diamondbacks responded was by going 2-4 after that. I kind of think this might open up a window to say, okay, if they don't turn it around soon, that shows this is a team that really can't handle adversity.
Douglas, I have a hard time really contemplating what is meant by saying that the Padres sucker punched us. What exactly is Torrey talking about? What are they talking about?
I just think we got sucker punched by a very good San Diego Padre team, and we've had a tough time recovering from that.
Yeah. We got sucker punched. That kind of terminology. You know, here we go. Doug goes deep, ladies and gentlemen. But we're reading into.
You said Doug goes deep as you're going deep.
Exactly. We're reading into this sucker punch. What exactly, Torrey, are you talking about?
I mean, it could just be a phrase where, hey, we expected good things and we didn't bring it. And it could be as simple as that. But even if it is, where I'm going deep is this team having meetings, telling guys, we've got to go, we've got to go, we've got to go. And when it didn't happen, they now can't get out of that.
Here's the thing right here, Basinonians. When you get sucker punched, and anybody that has ever been sucker punched, you know exactly what he's talking about.
Yeah, that's
true. When you get sucker punched, you had no idea it was coming. That's what a sucker punch is. Okay? You had no idea it was coming.
Boy, I can't believe they weren't ready to play.
Is that what they did collectively?
Maybe they just thought, we're better than the Padres. We'll get fired up for the Dodgers coming up later.
I honestly have to tell you, that right there, that kind of terminology is interesting.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
I really appreciate a friend of mine with the Diamondbacks sent me a note that it is official. The notes that I had written from early this morning either were changed or they were just wrong. And Christian Javier is going to go for the Astros today. He's a rookie that pitched very well in his last outing. And then Lance McCullers. And then to wrap up the series, Zach Greinke is going.
That's going to be good.
Bear, will you contact the Astros? I'm sure Zach Greinke would love to come on the show with us this week. So we'll we'll try to.
He would probably find that less of a hassle than throwing a no-hitter.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Coming up next, yesterday we heard from DeAndre Hopkins for the first time. What does he want to accomplish while he's wearing Cardinal red? It's coming up on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.